The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Sunday Business Post yesterday published a major investigation into the use of painkillers and tranquilizers here in Ireland. Its health editor Susan Mitchell is with us. Susan, what did you find in relation to an increased use?
Well, effectively, Matt, what we found was a pretty staggering rise in the use of sleeping tablets, and in particular a new class of sleeping tablets called Z drugs, and also painkillers, opiates and antidepressants. And in the case of one particular painkiller, we saw more than 1,000% increase in its use in the space of 10 years, with prescriptions rising from about 54,000 to over 652,000 between 2006 and 2016.
And why? Why is there this increase in the use of these drugs?
That's the million-dollar question. GPs have said that in some cases, so for example, in the case of where sleeping tablets and antidepressants are concerned, that they are finding it very difficult to access non-pharmacological treatments, for example, psychological therapies, because what we examined was solely patients with medical cards, because we were able to dig in and extract that data and also get individual patient numbers on individual drugs. So that was one of the things the GP said to us, and also that even community psychiatry services are completely overrun. One GP who we interviewed, who is the head or the president of the National Association of GPs, said that GPs are prescribing these drugs more quickly than they would like because they cannot access talking therapies for their patients, because these patients have medical cards and in many cases would be in a position to actually pay for those therapies privately.
Indeed, if your people aren't on medical cards, have we any indication of how many people who are paying for these drugs are actually doing so?
It would be more difficult to get that, because the HSE has a very good view of what's happening with medical card patients, because obviously it puts the bill for all of those drugs. Now, there is some information, I haven't analysed it yet though, for those on the drug payment scheme, you know, which is where you pay up to a certain threshold and then the state or the HSE covers the rest for your medicines. But we don't know what it's like for people who are paying the entire amount out of their own pockets.
Okay, stay with us, Susan. I want to bring in Colin O'Gara, consultant psychiatrist, head of action services at St John of God's. Good evening to you, Colin.
Good evening, Matt.
Okay, what do you make of these increases that have been outlined for us there by Susan in the numbers of prescriptions for these particular types of drugs?
Well, my immediate reaction, Matt, would be that we're looking at a wide range of medications here. We're looking at antidepressants, sleeping tablets, but then we're also looking at opioids. We know from the United States that there's an opioid crisis out there. We know that the rates of prescription of those drugs has gone way up, and the importation then of deadly drugs like fentanyl. We know that the deaths have increased hugely in the United States, and we're worried about that happening here as well. So to see the figures going up there, Matt, isn't such a surprise. To conflate these data with antidepressants, Matt, really worries me, because they're very, very different issues. And, you know, I think for your listeners listening who may be on antidepressants, my advice would be to keep taking your antidepressants and not to be worried in any way about dangers of antidepressants that have been mixed with addiction drugs, which in this article it is a little bit. So, you know, I think we're talking about many different things here. Z drugs, sleeping tablets, antidepressants, and opioids.
Okay, well, let's leave the antidepressants off for the moment and just deal with the other issues.
Yeah.
These pain relief, these sedatives, these sleeping tablets. What sort of side effects do they have? How addictive are they?
So side effects, all of the listed side effects would be caution around driving and operating machinery. That's often what you'd see labelled on the actual pills. I mean, I would say to you, Matt, these medications are critical in the treatment of psychiatric illness. And I would actually go behind these figures and say, well, you know, are people getting, are they actually people who need the services getting the services that they need? And are these figures reflecting the rising demand for services out there? We know that there's a, you know, there's a serious unmet need with regards to psychiatry at the moment. And there's certainly been a lot more greater, you know, a lot more awareness out there. But I think the government definitely needs to provide better services for mental health.
Okay,
that's absolutely clear.
Yeah, but if that doesn't happen, but let's face it, that's not going to happen automatically. And it might be very difficult to get to happen because of budgetary reasons. If people are using these opioid analgesic tablets, if they're using sedatives, if they're using sleeping tablets, is that going to do a damage to their physical and mental health?
Well, there's no question it will. It depends, again, Matt, at what level and what dose we're talking about. To give you the precise answer, addiction, you start with harmful use, and then at the end of that spectrum, you have addiction. And that's how ICD-10, or the European Classificatory System, looks at it. So people taking any of these substances in excess will run into difficulties. The kind of difficulties we see would be relationship difficulties, difficulties at work, in more extreme examples, people crashing cars, people, you know, grossly intoxicated, falling over, or people having to attend accident and emergency department where their stomach, their small intestine has been perforated and they're fighting for their life. So absolutely, these drugs carry significant problems. But I would go behind that again, Matt, and ask, why are we looking at these figures going up? What's the real story behind this? And for me, the real story is lack of services, addiction being an illness, not a stigmatized something else that people look down on. It's actually a medical illness, you know, just like other medical illness. And if this was diabetes, Matt, for instance, that we were talking about this evening, would this really be such a big story? If we're talking about diabetes drugs going up.
Okay, well, I'll go back to Susan in 1 second, but there's a listener here has a comment he wants to put to you, Colin. I've ruptured discs in savage agony constantly. My doctor prescribed Diphene and Tramadol, then went to a consultant and he said that I wasn't bad enough for surgery yet, and I was prescribed Lycrea and Solpadol. What else do I do? Painkillers every day the past 3 months.
That would be Lyrica and Solpadol, yeah, which is pregabalin. So that's one of the drugs featured in the article, and initially Matt thought to be non-addictive, but turns out it actually is addictive for some. I mean, this is ultimately chronic pain interfacing with addiction and the need for people to link in with their specialists. It's not something I can give you a black and white answer to, but this is the need for services where you have, for instance, cognitive behavioural therapists working within the pain specialty department, cognitive behavioural therapists working within the psychiatry, and the interface between those, so people get the right kind of help. Ultimately, it comes back to, Matt, the fact that there isn't enough services in, say, psychiatry and perhaps chronic pain as well.
I noticed, Susan Mitchell, in your piece in the Sunday Business Post, the cost of particular drugs has soared for the state. One that you mentioned, $25 million spent in 2016 as against $5 million a decade earlier. So a $20 million increase. But is it cheaper for the state to actually spend the money in the medicines rather than increasing the amount of people involved in psychiatric services?
Perhaps it is in the short term, but I wouldn't have thought so in the long run. And many of these people, the Medicines Management Programme highlighted that very clearly, that many people are on these drugs for too long. And it looked at benzodiazepines and Z drugs in particular. And according to the head of the Medicines Management Agency, patients should only be prescribed these drugs for short periods. So generally speaking, for a couple of weeks. But very many patients that they analysed over the course of a year were on these drugs for 6 months and 12 months. And just, Matt, if I could come back to a point that Colin made earlier, I think that, you know, perhaps there is less stigma around some of these illnesses. But it's interesting to compare our figures with the data that's emerging over in England. So over in England or in the UK, the government has initiated an investigation of usage of all of these drugs, including antidepressants, interestingly. And over in the UK, they have about 1 in 10 people treated by the NHS were on these medicines. On our medical card scheme, 1 in 10 people were just on benzodiazepines and this class of sleeping drugs. So the actual figures are a lot higher. In England, they don't have anything like the waiting list that we have here in order to access psychiatry and surgery, etc. So I'm not sure that we can explain this away by just saying that our waiting lists are causing this, full stop. I think there's possibly more to this.
Okay, a couple of questions coming in from listeners, Susan. I don't know whether it's possible to answer these or not. Suggestion, though, that there may be a black market developing in a lot of these particular drugs, that people might get them on medical cards but actually sell them on to other people.
You know, it's not something that's been brought to my attention, so I couldn't really comment on it because I just don't know, to be honest, Matt.
A second thing that people, another listener brings up, are there incentives to doctors from the drug companies to sell these drugs or to prescribe these drugs?
Is that a question for me?
It is, yes, for you, Susan.
There in the past, there was a lot of criticism over drug companies and indirect payments to doctors, but there's a lot less of that now. That said, very many drug companies do have doctors on their advisory boards. You know, pharmaceutical companies are the companies that are the organisations that tend to run international conferences. So when doctors go overseas for conferences, they are sometimes their travel might be funded by a pharmaceutical company. But there is a lot less than there has been in the past. And importantly, what's going on has become somewhat more transparent because the pharmaceutical sector, under a voluntary code of disclosure, now actually outlines the payments that it makes to individual doctors. But I think there is a problem there in that the pharmaceutical sector is very, very involved and has a huge role in the education of our doctors. How you divide those, I don't know.
Okay, just to finish with you, Colin O'Gara, as consultant psychiatrist and head of addiction services at St. John of God's, what about over-the-counter products, which may be slightly regulated, which contain codeine? Has that become an issue of people becoming addicted to codeine?
Well, it always has been, Matt. That's been a significant issue for at least the last decade. It was around 2012 that there were pharmacy restrictions brought in, which was access to boxes of the medication, so you could only buy so much at a particular time. And that was certainly helpful. There has been calls to ban codeine outright in the hope that that's going to the problem is going to go away. My own personal view, Matt, is that that's not going to do it because of the internet and the huge flood of drugs in from the internet.
Thank you very much, Dr. Colin O'Gara and Susan Mitchell, health editor of the Sunday Business Post.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.